Colleagues, while we're waiting for Commissioner Hardesty to return, and I'm sure she'll return in just a moment, why don't we call the item? Commissioner Udaly, I assume you want items 558 and 559 called together. Is that correct?
Let's see.
We read them together last time, so I don't see any reason why we couldn't today.
Sure.
Carla, would you mind reading items 558 and 559 together?
Mm-hmm. 558, add evaluation of applicants for dwelling units to include renter protections in the form of screening criteria regulations. And 558, add security deposit, 559, sorry, add security deposits, prepaid rent to include renter protections in the form of security deposit regulations.
Very good. And just to get us back on the same page in terms of where we are in the process, we have already heard both of these items. We've taken testimony on these items. Commissioner Udaly offered a substitute amendment, a substitute exhibit, which we voted in favor of. So the substitute is on the table before us. A number of amendments were offered up that have all been moved and seconded for the purposes of discussion and for public testimony. So today, assuming I have the flow of the process correct, we will be having discussion, answering questions, and it is my hope and expectation that we would be voting on the amendments today. Is that everybody's expectation? And then those amendments that are approved today would then move to second reading, and I believe next week is the week that has been picked for that. Does that comport with everybody's understanding?
Yes.
Very good. So with that, then we can start wherever the will of the council is. I would obviously like to have the opportunity to discuss the amendments I put on the table and ultimately vote on those, but it may be that people would like to start with a broader conversation first. Really, what is ever the will of the council?
Sure. So you pretty much covered everything that I was going to say in my introduction, other than the final vote is scheduled for Wednesday, June 19th at 4:15 p.m. Unfortunately, Commissioner Hardesty will be in D.C. at that time. We searched for another date when we would all be here, and it's not happening pretty much all summer.
Oh, wow.
So it's really next week or put it off even longer, and it's just we really need to move forward and move on.
Will Commissioner Hardesty be appearing by telephone?
No.
Okay.
We did schedule it at 4:15 in the hopes that that might make it possible for you, as it'll be the evening, and I wanted to have a conversation with you before this meeting. But
yes, as did
yeah.
Apparently, we're having it now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Mayor, you put several amendments forward in the last session or the last hearing. I've let your staff and all the commissioners' offices know where we stand on those amendments. And if you want to just, I'm not sure, first of all, do we need to read the amendment language?
No, the amendments
again?
Are on the
okay.
table, so we
Great.
Can simply refer to them.
Okay.
By number, and then maybe with a sentence or two, just to make sure we're all talking about the same amendments, but they've already been read into the record.
So
sure.
my understanding is we're just going into discussion, and we have all of us
Correct.
Have a cheat sheet with the sponsor's formal position, whether to accept, reject, or modify any amendment. So that guides the conversation. Can I kick things off with Amendment 1?
Yes,
we're having a discussion.
Yeah.
On the mayor's amendments?
On the mayor's.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Looks like we're going to start with the mayor's amendments. I have an amendment which is pretty pro forma, but we'll come back to that. Okay, Mayor Wheeler 1 proposes to eliminate a particular provision dealing with the timing of applications. In this instance, dealing with the situation where someone applies for something earlier than the open application period. My question to the sponsor is, how did you arrive at the essentially 8-hour penalty clause that's currently in the language, which says that it's treated as if it came in 8 hours afterwards? And what's the rationale for that?
Do we need to bring Jamie up?
I was going to do that in a minute, but okay. So, Jamie, if you could come up, because some of these amendments are extremely technical, I'm going to have Jamie answer some of the questions.
Good morning. Jamie Duhamel, Director of Policy for Commissioner Udaly. That specific part of the policy was developed in our beta test group at the end of policy development when we modeled out and walked through some mock screenings with the group that included some lawyers, tenant and landlord lawyers in the room. We recognized that there was a gap in the policy where there was no accounting for if somebody sent in their application. Let's say the open application period is 12 p.m. on January 1st and somebody submits their application at 11 o'clock or the day before, what is a landlord to do in that circumstance? And while we didn't want to eliminate somebody's ability to apply for that rental because they didn't recognize the open application period, we also didn't want to advantage them by putting them at the top of the line. So this was the compromise that we made. We chose the 8-hour period because that is the kind of waiting period for particularly around ADA units and preference policies. And so they got stuck at the top of the line after that first waiting period for preference applications.
So under this language, there are potentially a number of scenarios where that application that came in before the open application period still gets the unit.
Correct.
It's just that there's no reward for having come in ahead of the period, and you settled on 8 hours because there was a precedent for that period of time?
Correct. Exactly.
Could I give some of the logic for why I made the amendment? First of all, Commissioner Fish, as you indicated, there's a degree to which this is arbitrary. 8 hours was picked, 7 wasn't picked, 9 wasn't picked. And I want to be clear what stays intact with this. What does not change is the 72-hour notification period. That does not impact it. What this is impacting is the actual question of the application itself. And let me give you an example of where I think this becomes complicated. If you're a landlord and you come in on a Monday morning, and Monday is the day that you have picked for your application period, and you have a stack of applications in the mailbox, you cannot timestamp them. I mean, you have no legitimate way of knowing what time those applications came in. So there is, in fact, some degree of discretion here on the part of the landlord to say, okay, all of these applications came in, and I can accept them, or I can put them in the middle of the pile, the top of the pile, or the bottom of the pile. I acknowledge that. But what also happens is it is administratively complicated. It adds an extra burden. And in some cases, that 8 hours, if it is in a competitive unit, may in fact cause people to lose the opportunity. 8 hours, effectively, if you come in and you pick up the mail at the beginning of the day, that's really the next day's business. And so we know that in this particular market, those units, once, especially if they've been posted for 72 hours, they're going to get scooped up fairly quickly. Another administrative issue that was brought to my attention is in the case where you do not have competitive units, you could in fact be incentivizing people to pre-apply for a whole host of units, whether or not they've even been posted under the 72-hour requirement. And so that then creates the potential for long waiting lists for units on a de facto basis. So on balance, as I looked at this, I believe it does not significantly impact the intent of this portion of the ordinance, but it does simplify it from an administrative and a potential cost perspective, and it gets rid of the uncertainty which will be created not so much by digital applications, but by those that are mailed in, And the other question then that would arise by this is somebody might say, well, one of the things I really like about this ordinance and that I strongly support about this ordinance is the potential impact it would have on people with disabilities. We know that factually there are people with disabilities, mobility disabilities, who are currently being discriminated against. They still have access to reasonable accommodations under the Fair Housing Act and the ADA. So in my mind, that is not impacted by this at all.
So may I just follow up on that for a second?
Sure.
I appreciate the explanation you've given for the amendment. Let me offer a counter narrative. If we allow people to essentially jump the gun on the open application period, then we're creating a class of people who are treated differently. And my guess, without thinking about this too deeply, is that it's a class of insiders. It's people that are given a heads up in advance, or a landlord may want to steer, or for whatever reason. And while I agree that the 8 hours could be viewed as arbitrary, I mean, we could say 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours, nine, I mean, it's just a number. Isn't the risk here that creating, in essence, an incentive for people to apply before the open application period just creates a class of people who are advantaged? And doesn't it, in effect, render the underlying, doesn't it significantly undercut the whole purpose of having an open application process and leveling the playing field?
It absolutely does. If I could weigh in here, since this is,
I'll give my response.
So I feel like we've just heard some incredibly complex rationalization for something that's pretty simple. We've created a waiting period to make this process more equitable to people who face challenges or barriers in the application process. That may be a language barrier, that may be a disability. There's a variety of reasons why we want to give people an opportunity to get their materials together, complete the application before that process opens up. 8 hours is not arbitrary. 8 hours is linked to the waiting period on ADA units. So what this amendment does is negate that waiting period. We were trying to find a fair solution for people who perhaps inadvertently applied too early, so that their application wouldn't be thrown out. Frankly, I think it'd be, and I need to say the vast majority of applications are happening online. I don't think landlords are getting a stack of applications, or in person, a stack of applications coming in the mail, I think is unlikely. Landlords can put an autoresponder on the email attached to the application saying, I'm sorry, you know, this isn't open, or and you need to apply at this time. We simply made a concession to renters who may have accidentally applied too early, so they'll still be in the queue, but they don't get to be at the front of the line because they didn't follow the instructions. I'm just feeling, if you want to get rid of our waiting period, make an amendment to get rid of the waiting period, but taking this language out effectively negates the waiting period.
Okay, so let me defend my position, then I'll let Commissioner Fritz come in, because I don't necessarily agree with that narrative. I do agree with what you said, that this could be simplified. It could simply be, I mean, first of all, let's be clear about what's in the body of the ordinance. There is no requirement that the landlord make the application available. What's required by the 72-hour notification period is that the landlord has to stipulate what their screening criteria are. They have to stipulate what the unit is, they have to stipulate whether or not it is an ADA accessible unit, and they have to stipulate the time that the applications will actually be accepted. The simple thing to do would simply be to say applications are not accepted until time X.
Which is what we've asked.
Or alternatively, not make the application available until the actual time
that the
unit is available.
But ultimately,
I think that's where it will go, because why would a landlord send out the application in advance, knowing that that exposes them not to only to administrative burden and having to timestamp, sort, first in line, move it to 8 hours back, but it also potentially opens them to legal exposure.
So, Mayor, that just negates the waiting period, the purpose of the waiting period, in a different way, because the purpose of the waiting period is to allow people that face barriers or challenges to completing that application time to complete it. So it needs to be provided in advance so that they can get it in and be competitive with people who don't face those barriers. And like I said, that could be language, it could be disability, it could be an individual facing some of the barriers that we're trying to address with our low barrier screening criteria, who need to get together supplementary information to kind of argue their case for why they are a good tenant despite whatever marks may be on the record. So interfering with that waiting period, whether it's allowing people to apply earlier than the waiting period and get to the front of the line, or not giving them the application in advance to fill out, negates the entire purpose of this waiting period. And it's an essential part of this policy, because we are trying to decrease barriers to housing for people who face extraordinary barriers,
right,
or challenges.
But the examples you just gave are currently, these are all examples of reasonable accommodation that an applicant could ask for under existing law.
No, they're not. No, they're not. Absolutely not.
Well, I would point you to reasonable accommodations under fair housing law.
Jamie, do you want to come back up and comment on that? There may be wording in that law, but part of the point of this policy is that we're not seeing adherence to the Fair Housing Act. We are seeing discrimination in the rental market, and we are trying to solve for it. So, Jamie, can you please respond to that specific concern?
So reasonable accommodations allows a prospective tenant to negotiate certain conditions in their unit when they're negotiating getting into that unit, but it doesn't speak to the processing of those applications ahead of time. So they could be effectively, not even processed or ignored before they even get the chance to request reasonable accommodations for the unit.
Thank you.
Is that legal counsel's opinion?
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
I did not advise on this matter, but I could certainly get the attorney who did provide advice down here and answer your question.
The ordinance speaks to mobility disabilities, so that is physical disabilities. It's my understanding that that is protected under reasonable accommodations under the Fair Housing Act and ADA.
But this
I would
doesn't
say, Mayor, that if you show up and you have a mobility device, that's one thing. But if you are doing an online application and you are applying, a landlord will normally try to pick the most expedient applicant they could possibly get. As a renter, I can tell you that apartments in my complex don't stay empty too long. It's to the apartment owner's benefit to get as many people applying while they're cleaning the apartment that the person just moved out of. And so I absolutely agree that even though we have laws in place that are supposed to protect some of our most vulnerable people, in reality, it absolutely does not work. It's just like we're not supposed to discriminate against people, but we know that happens every single day in this community. So I would love to hear what Commissioner Amanda Fritz has to say, because I know she's been patiently waiting.
She has, and I will call on her in one moment. I just want to point out one thing, though. This is in reference to applications received early. This does not impact the rest of the ordinance with regard to first come, first serve. This is specifically this whole clause regard to how do you deal with applications that come in the door prior to the open application process. That is narrowly focused on that. Commissioner Fritz.
Okay.
I think it would be helpful to acknowledge right off the bat that we all agree that there are problems with fair housing, with the way the laws are implemented, that we've had multiple audits, and we know that people are being discriminated against. And so there's no opposition about that on the council. The question is, how do we address that? I just have a basic question. We received testimony, a written testimony from a property manager who said that they already do first come, first serve, and that they are sometimes greeted when they arrive at work with people throwing applications through the car door window. So we know that there is a digital divide that low-income people of color often do not have access to internet. We know that 5G is coming, that will cost more money, but it will be faster, so that the people with the 5G phones are going to be able to get their electronic applications in right on the dot. Although, as somebody who buys a lot of concert tickets online, I wait and watch until my computer tells me that the time has clicked by. I click enter, and I am often put in a queue and wait. As somebody at the back there has also had that experience. You wait for 5, 10, 15 minutes. Please let me put my application in. So to the sponsor, what is the process whereby if you open it at 8 o'clock, you've got a line of people? Are there allowed to be a line of people outside of the property manager's door waiting to put in the application, and they've been waiting there for 72 hours, which is also, can you afford to be outside for 72 hours? Who's first? The person who's waiting outside the door, or the person who gets it online, happens to get in first online?
So just like the Fair Housing Act that was passed 51 years ago and the ADA Act that was passed about 25 years ago, this policy does not solve any possibility that you can come up with. Emails have times on them, so it would be very easy to intersperse emailed applications, which the vast majority of them are, with applications received in person. And I don't know how they would treat applications received in the mail. That presumably would be up to the discretion of the landlord. I feel like people are coming up with every possible eventuality or little hang-up. The issue here is that we have created a waiting period to reduce barriers for people who face challenges in securing rental housing, and this amendment will effectively negate that purpose. So we're not... I know I haven't entirely answered your question, although I think I mostly have, and it isn't really the question at hand. The question at hand is, if someone applies earlier than the stated application date and time, should they get to go to the front of the line? And my position is no. And Jamie, working with community partners and through the beta, including landlords, and through the beta test, came up with this compromise, which is that they will not get to the front of the line. They don't deserve to be at the front of the line, but their application will not be discarded. It will be placed in the queue after an 8-hour waiting period. And I'm going to have Jamie come back up because I want to make sure we get all the details right.
That is absolutely correct. I would add one more thing, is that we made changes to the ways in which receipts are provided for tenants, and that is also to decrease the administrative burden and account for the fact that landlords may be taking in applications from multiple venues at the same time. On the one hand, landlords have the ability to change their business practices and may just require that all applications come through the front door in a certain way to minimize the chaos for themselves. But on the second hand, we have changed the receipt process, and the queuing process so that landlords only have to respond when requested and within 5 days. That gives the landlord the time to figure out which order people were in, so they're not giving the wrong receipts at the moment and telling people they're in a certain line of the queue when they didn't realize they had emails that had people coming in sooner. So there are mechanisms built in there for landlords to develop their own system that decreases their administrative burden for themselves.
Jamie, if I may, this section again, it is not prescriptive in terms of telling landlords during that 72-hour period that they need to make the application available at all. This is simply an opportunity for them to be clear about what their screening criteria is and the availability of the unit. Is that correct?
I think technically you may be correct that we have not said in policy that you must make the application available. I think there was certainly a understanding that landlords, when they say I have a unit open and I want to take applications, will make those applications available. I'm not sure why they wouldn't otherwise, because they want to get the ball rolling. It's landlords who told us that the 72-hour window will diminish the turnover time for their own properties. So waiting the 72 hours and then handing out applications is them, in effect, diminishing their own turnover time. So that doesn't seem logical to me. But also, the policy is in effect only when landlords advertise. So theoretically, they could give that property to a friend or family member because they don't have to legally advertise that property. But secondly,
there's a waiting list.
What's that?
Or utilize their waiting list.
Right. There is also, they can also process multiple applications at a time and put them on the waiting list as long as they're making a determination in order. And finally, the policy is triggered by the submittal of a completed application. So it's not even so much when the applications are handed out. So even if they waited the open application period, then handed out applications, they don't have to process those applications until they're received fully completed.
Okay.
I
don't want to belabor this too much, but I've read this thoroughly, and there's nothing in it that implies, suggests, or requires that landlords must provide the application. I did not see that. I did have one other question, which is, follow Commissioner Fritz's, and by the way, I agree with Commissioner Daly that I would assume the majority of applications will be digital and they'll be timestamped. So that's sort of a non-issue from my perspective, but let's say somebody hands in the application or somebody chooses to mail the application. There isn't really any way of telling whether or not the landlord is faithfully putting those on an 8-hour timestamp or whether, in fact, they're putting them at the top of the pile. We have no way of knowing, do we?
Well, that's partly why there's a receipt and queuing component, that they are handing out receipts to folks when they're turning in their applications. Again, we've kind of diminished that because of the administrative burden issue and because of the multiple applications. But you're correct. If landlords choose to not follow the law, we have limited ability with which to make sure they're doing that.
Which is already true.
Correct.
So again, we can't solve every possible eventuality or outcome. What our aim here is just to continue advancing fair housing law to decrease barriers to housing for people who face challenges.
And if I may, just one more comment, Commissioner.
Yeah, please.
We debated the type of application processing ad nauseum over the last 2 years of this policy. And what we determined is that the first-come, first-served process is the most equitable, although not fully equitable, but the most equitable while also balancing enforceability through the receipt process. So the most equitable process would obviously be a random lottery of folks who qualify for the property. But because we have no system to ensure enforceability on that, we would essentially end up with the same exact system we have today, which is landlords just say, of course I chose this person randomly, but they end up just picking out of the pile who they like the best. So this is the best way that we have found, and it is recommended in fair housing guidance, and it is followed right now voluntarily by many of the larger landlords because of its equitable
Any
intentions.
Further discussion on this amendment?
I guess I'm still not clear, Mayor, what your amendment seeks to do.
It seeks to reduce what I believe is a barrier that is somewhat arbitrary in nature that will be very difficult to enforce that, in my opinion, will provide one more barrier to the unit being available. I believe that this issue is already addressed through reasonable accommodations. And at the end of the day, I think ultimately landlords, for the most part, will choose not to provide the application in advance because it exposes them both to the administrative burden and potential legal ramifications. That's the basics for this one.
And so are we at a position that we're going to be voting on this amendment?
Yes.
I say yes. Yep. Let's just, I think everybody knows what their position is on this, so let's go ahead and call the roll, Carla.
Fish?
Well, if the discussion on the other amendments is as lively as this one, we may have to push the afternoon session into the early evening. I really appreciate this discussion. I think it's helpful. I've thought a lot about this amendment, and I want to say, Mayor, I appreciate that in bringing a suite of amendments, you've signaled a desire to try to get to yes on this. And there's a number of amendments here that have the sponsor's support, which I think is important. I'm concerned that this amendment does undermine the open application period. And I am somewhat comforted by the fact that through the next year of doing further outreach, through the rulemaking process, and through the annual reporting, if there is a barrier that we missed or in practice becomes significant, I will be interested in revisiting these issues. But at this point, I think the risk here is that we undermine the open application period and, in essence, privilege a class of applicants, which I don't think is the intent. So I can't support the amendment, no.
Hardesty?
Ditto what Commissioner Fish said, I vote
no.
Udaly?
No.
Fritz?
Both the Urban League of Portland and the Community Alliance of Tenants have agreed that the whole first come, first served is fundamentally inequitable. As we know, as I said, the fact that people, not everybody can be online at a particular time, if they have to wait for the library to open, for example, I think this would have made it slightly better. And so I vote aye.
Wheeler?
Obviously, I support this, or I wouldn't put it on the table. First of all, thank you, everyone, for the discussion and the clarification. Commissioner Fish, to your point, my expectation is that, assuming that the majority will pass this in some form, either amended or not amended, it would be my expectation that there will be parts of this that the Housing Bureau will have to bring back to the council. And we'll just have to see where the chips fall on this one. I vote aye. The amendment fails 3-2. Can I go on to the second amendment?
Yes, please.
Is this working for everybody in terms of how to structure this?
And I'd just like to call Jamie up.
Commissioner
Daly, just stay at the table for the duration of this, please.
Unless you want to exercise, that's Mayor, always an option.
Mayor?
Commissioner Fish?
I'm just a little concerned about time, and the sponsor has accepted your amendment. I move the amendment.
Well, the amendment's already been moved. It's already seconded.
I moved to a vote.
So before I go to the roll call, it would be nice to know that I have three votes on this.
Well, the sponsor accepts your amendment.
I accept the amendment. I want to point out that CAT and Urban League were two of our most important community partners in developing this policy, and they both came out in force to both of the hearings to support it. They, you know, with some concerns, and was this one of them, Jamie?
Can you remind me of what amendment?
I'm sorry, this is the amendment taking out the language 50 or fewer in regards to excluding tenants who have been, I guess, evicted within 365 days.
It is true that those organizations do not support this amendment. It was their request that we limit it to smaller landlords because they didn't want particular tenants to be effectively banned from entire areas. But we felt like this was, in the end, a smallish concession to move the policy.
Very good. Carla, call the roll.
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Thank you, colleagues. All right, the amendment's passed. Amendment number three. Commissioner Udaly and my team, Commissioner Udaly's team and my team have drafted some language. I put a placeholder in, removing section two. I put a placeholder language in. The language that we've agreed to, I've spoken to legal counsel this morning, is a friendly amendment and therefore would not require an additional amendment. According to legal counsel, I'll read it into the record. So we will strike the language that I put in, which is preferential access for the accessible dwelling units will be given to people with mobility disabilities. That was a placeholder. The more formal language is, if there are multiple applicants for an accessible dwelling unit with a family member that is mobility disabled, the landlord must accept, conditionally accept, or deny such applications in order of receipt, but prior to processing completed applications for applicants without household members that are mobility disabled. And I accept that as a friendly amendment. Any further discussion on this item? Please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment passes. Item amendment number five.
Four.
Four was withdrawn last week based on testimony. So this is amendment number five. And it is related to amendment number six, and it's my understanding that the sponsor accepts these amendments, so please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
All right, that's five, if you can call six.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
I voted aye because the sponsor has accepted the language in amendment six.
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. Amendment seven, I had a question for Commissioner Udaly. The exemptions that we put on the table parallel the exemptions that we use for RELO. Commissioner Udaly had come back with an alternative set of amendments. Commissioner, the question I have for you is legal counsel could not agree that those constitute mere friendly amendments because they strike a key section of the original amendment, which would mean that we would have to take testimony and move this to a second reading. I didn't know if what you felt about that.
What's, Jamie, if you could remind me what the
Revision in front of you
changes. Yeah.
So it simply adds for subsections E and F at the beginning of the proposed amendment.
D and E.
Are we on amendment number seven?
Yes.
Says D and
yeah.
E.
So this is the yeah. one where it would exclude the same exclusions, the same exemptions that we have in RELO from the selection criteria. But under Commissioner Udaly's counterproposal, it would be limited to sections E and F only. That is the screening criteria section.
Correct.
But they would still have to comply with the 72-hour requirement, the ID requirement,
yes.
First come, first serve, and the like. And so my question really is a process question for Commissioner
okay.
Udaly. Which is, do you want to take testimony on this amendment and have it moved to second next week, which means that
I guess if that's yeah. what we need to do, or I'm...
If it moves to second next week, then we wouldn't be able to vote on the policy next week.
Yeah, that's the problem with getting last-minute amendments. So I'm not sure what to... Do.
I see much fundamentally different between the two.
Well, the difference is that the mayor's amendment would have exempted these landlords from the whole policy. And
like
we, because we don't have a complete registry, we have no idea how many units this type of landlord represents. And I frankly don't think that small-time landlords should be more able to discriminate than anyone else. What we heard in testimony over the course of these two sessions from small landlords is they're not professional enough to adopt our policy, and from large landlords that they're too professional. Everyone agrees that discrimination is bad. No one wants to change their practices. So it's my strong position that while I am fine with exempting them on, sorry, I'm getting on the screening side, right? We're not exempting them from the all the requirements of the policy.
So it sounds like we can't amend the amendment without opening the record back up and moving it to second reading, which would delay the final vote. So the only other option is to vote up or down the amendment as proposed by Mayor Wheeler without revising it.
That is my understanding from legal counsel. And if I could just put one explanation on the table, I think we all agree that there is a balancing act here. And the concern that I would raise is with a very, a legitimately small landlord, not one who's gaming the system by having 25 different LLCs, but somebody who, and we had a couple of people come in and testify, somebody who rents their ADU or rents a room in their home. My concern would be that if we create too much of an administrative burden, 72-hour reporting, the first in line, the time stamping, and the other requirements of the full ordinance, it may just be easier for people to go click on the Airbnb site instead. That's my concern. Commissioner Fritz.
I agree with that concern, as one of my neighbors is adding in an accessory dwelling unit, and they are going one step further, and they're not going to advertise because this is not a landlord who doesn't advertise does not have to follow any of these rules. And so that then further means that it's going to be friends of friends rather than open to anybody to access. We did receive one piece of testimony while the record was held open from a person who moved into her ADU and is renting out her main house. And so that was pointed out as a problem for both the relocation exemption and for this, that clearly that's something we want seniors to be able to do, is to downsize and for them to be able to occupy their ADU, but that the rules should be the same then for the family who's going to share their property.
Commissioner Fritz, to that point, just sort of an aside, the Housing Bureau is in receipt of that testimony to council, and it's my understanding that they will be bringing a potential revision back to council for our consideration on that exact point. Because we really didn't take into account what happens if you choose to vacate the main residence and instead live in the ADU and rent the main residence, and I think that was just a legitimate oversight.
Presuming that could be fixed here as a friendly amendment.
Or it could be done through further code revision, and frankly, that would be my preference, as we just do it all at once.
All right. So
this isn't ideal, but I'm happy to just accept this amendment, and if it is something that we feel we need to revise, we've got 9 months before this policy is implemented. So let's take a vote.
I think that's right, Commissioner Daly.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to cut off Commissioner Hardesty.
That's okay. I was actually going to recommend, why don't we just like not do it and then have them come back with the recommendation 6 months or 8 months from now.
I'm fine with that, too.
Okay. Well, we'll find out right now.
Yes, we will.
The suspense is palpable. Please call the roll.
I did accept the suspense.
And just to be clear, this is Wheeler Amendment 7.
Fish. This is the last of the mayor's amendments. I want to compliment the sponsor and the proponent of the amendments for the conversation that we've had. We should have more conversations like this. This reminds me a little bit of the conversations we have on land use matters, where we have a chance as a council to air out differences in public. The feedback that I get from people is they really appreciate the transparency of hearing people. My touchstone as a commissioner, unless a fundamental principle that I care about is violated, is I look to the sponsor for guidance. The sponsor in most of the work we do is doing the heavy lifting, is keeping an eye on compromise, trying to build a bigger coalition. I've been extremely impressed with the sponsor's efforts to do this. Because the sponsor is willing to accept the amendment with the proviso that we can come back and revisit it, which I think makes a lot of sense because of the time frame that you've given us, I welcome the chance to come back with more data. But based on the record that we have now, I can support this amendment. Aye.
Hardesty?
I would love to have had more conversation about this particular amendment, and because we have not been able to do that and we anticipate changes coming back sometime in the next 6 or 8 months, I am very confident to vote no.
You Daly.
I do think Commissioner Hardesty's suggestion was the most logical choice here. We have a delayed implementation of 9 months. If we feel like this is something that needs to be fixed, or even I'm hearing from some colleagues expanded upon, it would make more sense to me to not pass the amendment as it is today, but to come back to this conversation sometime before the implementation with a better worded and perhaps more fleshed out of the amendment. I vote no.
Fritz.
This is challenging because I don't know what the process is going to be of whether we've got the right exemptions here or not. It's obvious that one of them is not right. I think it would be better to have these come back sooner rather than later. No.
Wheeler.
Yes, the amendment fails 3-2. All right, next up are...
Could I move to reconsider? No, I didn't.
We have a motion to reconsider.
Yeah.
Second.
Second.
Commissioner Fritz.
I think I would like to change my vote, please. So I'd like to... Is everybody okay with moving to, with the accepting the motion to reconsider?
It's a courtesy.
Yeah.
Thank you. So if I'd like to change my vote to so, yes.
The motion passes 3-2.
Mayor, we have one more amendment, I think.
We have several. Commissioner Udaly has three, and you have one. Should we get to yours next, Commissioner Fish?
I'm happy to follow Commissioner Udaly's lead.
Thank you.
Sure. So, let's take Fish 1.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on Fish 1? Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
I love amendments that are very well worded, and I can understand them when I read it the first time. I vote aye.
You Daly?
thank you, Commissioner. I support this amendment. I vote aye.
Fritz?
I'm concerned about giving the Housing Bureau yet another responsibility on this. On the other hand, I believe that there should be annual reports so that we can fix any of the problems that come up. Aye.
Wheeler?
As the Housing Commissioner, I want to be clear, it's the Housing Bureau's opinion that there will need to be revisions to this policy, and that it is imperative that the Housing Bureau work closely with this council. And so the reporting requirement is appropriate, and it would be my expectation as the Housing Commissioner that we would be reporting back even more frequently and sooner than proposed in the amendment. But I assume this is sort of an outside bracket in terms of the reporting requirement to the council. I vote aye. Fish 1 passes. Commissioner Udaly has three amendments. Any further discussion of Udaly number 1? Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment passes. Udaly amendment 2, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
I'm concerned about this. This is about considering if supplemental evidence. I think it's really complicated and an administrative burden, as was the rationale for taking it out. So I vote no.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment passes 4-1. Amendment 3, call the roll, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment passes. So that is, unless I screwed up here, that is all the amendments. Is that correct?
That is all we've got.
Okay, very good. Any further discussion on this item, or does that close us out for today? Then it is my understanding that we will come back on Wednesday, June, was it 14th, Commissioner Udaly, or is it 19th?
The 19th.
Okay, very good. Wednesday, June 19th at 4:15 p.m. time certain. And if there's any changes to that, we'll go through the usual notification.
There will not
process.
Be any changes.
Great. All right, good. And very good. So this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading as amended.